I will hurt you for this. I don't know how yet, but give me time. A day will come when you think yourself safe and happy, and suddenly your joy will turn to ashes in your mouth, and you'll know the debt is paid.
Welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Currently regularly hosted by myself, Brett, and Daryl Lloyd. Thanks go out to George R. R. Martin for the world we're all fans of, FFG for this amazing game, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons license music that you hear in this episode. This is Season 4.
Yeah, that's intense.
Yeah, I thought we'd go, you know, take the show in a darker direction.
All right, so looks like it's just the two amigos.
Yeah, sure enough. It's just Will and Daryl this week. Thanks for suffering through this, listeners.
Our hearts go out to you.
Yep, we Had some scheduling issues this week and whatnot, and we were the only two that were able to get together right now. But I am happy to announce to the listeners here, I think going forward, we should be able to avoid some of our crunch, because I think we're going to invite Mr. Kyle Vansel on as a regular host.
Yes. And through a lot of paperwork, we had to pull a lot of strings, because, you know, those podcast payouts and royalties that go to Greg and Brett, you know, for being founders of the show. So we got him a nice contract with the podcast. He'll be making about $1.3 million this year, with a $20,000 signing bonus. So Congrats to him.
Yeah. And, of course, don't forget the golden parachute so he can eject when the show tanks.
Yes. He definitely has that.
Yep.
You should also find solace in the fact that we've been taking plenty of shots so that we can make sure to have good quality content for you tonight or today or this morning, wherever you are listening to this.
Or the afternoon. It could be, you know, whatever. It could be exactly noon, for all I know.
Somewhere.
It could be 5 o'clock somewhere. I think I should be drinking a margarita.
Nothing wrong with that.
We were looking around for topics for this week, and we happened to look at Aegot cards, and lo and behold, the entire Forgotten Fellowship pack appears to have now been spoiled on their website. Now, I haven't seen any sort of announcement yet from FFG that the pack is on sale or anything, so, you know, little caveat, there's the chance that, you know, all of these cards might be completely made up. Which I think would be hilarious, but
that would be nice.
at the moment, they look fairly legit. So I think Daryl and I are going to give a chapter pack review a shot here for your ear pleasure.
Yeah. We would have preferred to have a third guy on here, obviously, but we just couldn't do it, and we just couldn't help but dissect these cards.
Yeah. You just can't avoid it when there's new cards to look at. If only I, you know, had them in my hands now so I could sniff that glorious new card smell.
Yeah, that's right. It's like opening up a bag of chips or something. You can't open up a bag of chips and just leave it there.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta taste it. You know, it's kind of like having a bottle of champagne. You can't just not open it up and pour it all over this girl's boobies. You just have to do it.
Yeah, that's not the example I would have expected, but yep.
That's not what you do with champagne?
No. I mean, you do. It just, I didn't expect you would go with that example as a whole. You know, I thought maybe like Pringles, once you pop, you can't stop, or something like that. But
sure.
I guess maybe. I should have expected
or
that
like
out of Daryl.
Embezzlement. Once you embezzle once, you can't not embezzle more.
Right. Right, which is why they generally send people to jail for that.
Oh, yeah.
Generally.
I have not been embezzling from the show.
Sure, he hasn't.
I do
also,
not have a Swiss
Kyle,
bank account.
Daryl has already stolen your entire signing bonus. Sorry, bro.
Yeah, you won't be seeing any of that money, so enjoy it. Well, shall we get to the first card?
I think we should. Daryl, you want the first one?
I'll do it.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, and I guess we should also point out to the listeners, we're just doing them in the order that they're listed on AGOT cards rather than trying to do them in numerical order.
Yeah, we're just going to do it the easy way. So we're going to start off with Lannister. This card is Ashmark Knight. He is 2 strength, military, and a power icon. He has the Bannerman as well as the Knight trait. And he reads, any phase, discard a card from your hand to draw 1 card. That sounds pretty solid to me.
I love this guy. That is one of the most solid weenies I've seen for Lannister in a while. And that's even counting that awesome Night's Watch dude we got last pack.
Yeah, there's going to be some interesting ways that you can use this. So not only just to blindly just discard something that's worthless to you out of your hand to draw a new one, but also to maybe set up a card that you would put on the top of your deck through maybe one of the one of those guys.
One of the heralds.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Or depending on, you know, what else you've got in your hand, maybe you want to trade it for one of the other cards that you saw with Summer Toman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some options. Of course, Lannister does have that greedy counselor who can then be played from your discard pile. In fact, even at a discount, to get her out. But I just, he's cheap. He's got good traits, Bannerman, and probably way more importantly, Knight are both relevant. And, you know, like a lot of people are going to look at this and be a little bummed that they've got to discard a card, you know, and they're like, well, I'm not going to lose a card if I'm using like Golden Tooth Mines or, you know, Pyromancer's Cash or something. But the Ashmark Knight has a few things going for him. Number one, he's a character that can actually participate in challenges. He can eat it for Claim Soak if you need it. You know, whatever you need in the challenge phase there. But also, there's not any cap or limitation on his ability, really, other than, you know, the draw cap, obviously. And having at least 1 card in your hand. Like, he just helps you dig as far as you need to whatever you need.
Yeah.
Like, without anything else on the board, really, just needing that 1 card in hand, you can dig 3 deep into your deck every turn.
Yep. So if you're searching for an answer, it'll help you get there. So, pretty good. Oh, man, what to give him? I don't know what to give him. No, I do. I'm going to go ahead and give him a C. I think he's going to be great in a Knight deck, or if you're running Bannerman theme, I think he's going to have a place for sure with the digging ability. Probably not going to make it into every Lannister deck, but I like what he does.
Oh, man, maybe not quite every, but I'm going to look at him pretty hard for a bunch of mine. And plus, he kind of helps even out on the icons that Lanny can be a little low on. I'm feeling a pretty solid B for him. He's not a perfect card, but he does an awful lot of good things.
Yeah, well, he's super efficient for his cost, that's for sure. But, you know, whatever. I mean, I can see where you're coming from. All right, why don't you give me the next one?
Oh, sorry. One other thought on Ashmark Knight.
Okay, what?
Out of house, in Bera. They've already got See Who Is Stronger for Knight Recursion. He's a knight. He can be put back into play if you need him. And he totally just fuels those decks. Dale and Mel's scheme and see who is stronger and all of that.
He certainly makes it easier. But that's, I mean, you'd have to pay four for him, though.
You would, unless you were doing some kind of build with a treaty or if you were using the Alliance plot. And, man, I don't know, once you've got him in play, he just really powers those kind of decks right through.
Yeah.
So, anyway, next card then. This one is also Lannister. It is a zero-cost character, Sir Gregor's dog. Oddly, does not look like he's actually a dog. He is a zero-strength military and intrigue icon. He has the mercenary trait and the text response. After a card is discarded from any player's hand, Sir Gregor's dog gets +1 strength until the end of the phase.
Not bad.
Yeah. You know, it's not terrible. It seems like a pretty reasonable replacement for the refugee, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And definitely in melee.
Oh, yeah. In melee, especially, like, if you're going last, he could be 3 strength by the time it gets to your turn. Maybe more if people's claim is higher or they're using some discard effects.
Yep. If you're rolling that Ashmark Knight, fits right in there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because the Ashmark Knight, sorry, I'm going to flip back to him. Is he any phase? Yes, he is any phase. Yeah. So if you can afford to wait and use his ability in challenges, I mean, right there, Gregor's dog can be 3 strength off of him.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a pretty good payoff there. Mercenary trait is not great, but it's not the worst either.
So what would you give him?
You know, he's probably still just a solid C. Though I do like the possibility of going back in time here and dredging out the was it Gold Cloaks, I think it is? Mm-hmm. The Shadows card from Lannister that draws a card for every mercenary when you bring him out of Shadows. I think that could be pretty cool.
It's not a bad idea. I find it, like, I want to give him a C.
Mm-hmm.
I find it really hard. I just feel like as Lannister, like, you never lose an intrigue challenge just about. And so it would be hard to, you know, to give him that +1. I guess in a Iron Throne deck, Power Behind the Throne deck, rather,
mm-hmm.
he would be pretty solid.
Not bad.
We'll be able to use him on that next challenge, probably.
Set up, use him on the second challenge. Pretty good for Tunnels of the Red Keep as well.
Yeah, Lanny Tunnels. Yeah, and just because of that, I'll give him the C. I didn't even think about Lanny Tunnels.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect.
That's an even better idea.
Like, they've already got the setup penalty because of House of Dreams, so being zero cost arguably, you know, has a bigger impact there on setup. And then he's got, you know, 2 icons. You're already looking at Shadows cards, so maybe you're running those Gold Cloaks in that deck. He's got some really nice synergy there.
All right. So he gets a pair of C's. Oh, yeah.
Yes, he does.
All right. Next card is an event. It is Harry the Riverlands. It is House Lannister only. It says any phase, kneel any number of characters with combined printed cost 3 or lower.
Ouch. Well, there's a quick way to screw over opposing Gregor's dogs.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, and it gets you thinking, could we see the refugees come off the restricted list whenever they print something like this?
You know, it kind of makes me wonder. Between that and the Stark event, you play it more often than me. I can't think right now.
Breaching the Wall? Breaching the Wall.
Yes, I believe so.
Breaching the Wall. And also, with Dissension, I mean, Dissension is still a thing and is still viable.
Maybe, but I think that's
maybe not as viable
later.
Yeah,
if the refugees were to come back, it certainly would be again.
Yeah. So, this isn't a bad bad Neil event, for sure.
It's actually, I think, pretty great for free, you know?
I mean, yeah, and if you think about how many times have you played, you killed the wrong dwarf on, like, a 2-cost guy. It happens more often than you'd like it to.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly threes, you know, Uniel, geez, Wintertime Marauders is one I do a lot.
Exactly. They don't claim a power.
Yeah, yeah, it still handles that sort of thing and has the potential upside of maybe kneeling, like, three Lannisport Moneylenders or, you know, whatever the combination might be.
Yep. I like it. I like it a lot. I'm going to go ahead and give it a B. I like it that much. I mean, at worst, it's a good kneel event. Everyone knows the majority of characters that are going to be in somebody's decks is going to be a cost three character, and a lot of the good ones are cost three, a lot of the efficient ones. So I dig it.
Yeah, you know, I hate to just agree again there. The event slot is tough for Lanny, but I've definitely run Hyperkneel decks where I've been looking at something like, say, Distraction, you know, to round out my events along with You Killed the Wrong Dwarf. And I think Harry the Riverlands is just going to be straight up better than that, you know, 90% of the time. So I think Harry the Riverlands is going to definitely find a home.
Yep.
All right. Guess I'm up with the next one here. Now we've got a new character here. We're moving on to House Stark. This is Robb Stark. 4 cost, 3 strength, military and power icons. He is a lord, and he has a war crest. He has renown, and the text, response. After you win a challenge in which Robb Stark participated, choose and kill a character with a higher strength than printed cost. Cannot be saved. I mean, that's some pretty sweet art. I'm just going to throw out there.
Yeah,
I believe we saw that on some play mats that folks were pretty excited about.
Yep. I'll let you start. What are your first impressions here?
I like the crest, the renown, and the unique out of Stark. The renown is just always good to speed things up a little bit, but the crest and unique means he's going to be able to trigger a couple different kill events when he's in a challenge. So even outside of his ability, he slots in pretty nicely. 4 is a tough slot, though.
You know, you'd have to roll with one of those decks where you're trying to pump up your opponents a little bit, kind of like the Breaching the Wall deck that I have, and do those kind of shenanigans. I just don't see him regularly rocking that. I mean, there's definitely cards that are being printed and that have been printed with higher strength and cost. And we talked about Lanny Tunnels earlier, but how often would you run this guy over the plus one Rob or plus two if it's winner? You know what I mean? Like, that is tough.
Yeah. And the other one is a king. So he shuts down some opposing effects, you know, just by being in play.
Now, I forget, the other one doesn't have a war crest, though, right? So this one does.
Right, the other one has no
war. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, that changes it up.
And then the Robb Stark that's 4 for 2 doesn't have any crest. Is that correct, or does he have a war crest?
He may not have any. I'm not recalling right off the top of my head.
I can't remember.
But a quick search can fix that. Let's see. That Robb has a noble crest.
Oh, okay. He does have a noble. Okay. So
don't forget the army Robb. Everyone forgets the army Robb.
Oh, good old army Robb. He's fun. I don't know, man. You'd have to build a deck all around that kind of stuff. And can you? Yeah. But it would be hard for me to throw him in a deck with the hopes of just catching an opponent who has, you know, a 4 for 5 out, like the Northern Cavalry flanked or something like that. So.
Right. Well, it's going to be tough to win challenges around a cavalry flank.
Yeah.
Or if you're running Stark, Robb is up against cavalry flank 4 slots in your deck.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a fair amount of ways to get stand out of him. And so if you could potentially knock through multiple challenges and have your opponent's characters pumped up in some way, man, I mean, that is going to wreck some asses.
Yeah, and he's not limited to military. See,
yeah,
you could push through the power and do it. He's also not limited to it being controlled by the person that lost. So in a melee game, you could knock someone else's character off the board, which is nothing to sneeze at.
Nothing to sneeze at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. So, I'm gonna let you grade him first.
it's tough. He's not actively bad. He just has some really stiff competition. So I think I'm gonna give him like a C-.
C minus, huh? Well, and I even play, you know, I play this the type of deck that he is played in, and I just, I'm just gonna go ahead and do it. I'm gonna give him a D. Giving it to him now, and I'll probably be wrong later. I don't know, but that's what he's getting for now. I mean, he is. Don't get me wrong; he's cool. But the problem is, there are so many other. Well, there's not so many other. There's one other really good Rob out there, and that one is still just better, in my opinion. But only time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ways to pump up strength now, so maybe he'll be better. Next card, unless you have more to say about Rob Stark.
Nope, I'm good on Rob. Okay.
Alright, next card is another Stark character. It is Harwin. He's unique. He is two cost, two strength, military power with the Brotherhood trait. Oh, snap. He says, while any opponent's house card has more power than your house card, Harwin gains response after you win a military challenge. Search your deck for a card, shuffle your deck, and then put that card on top of your deck. That's pretty rad.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like a really powerful effect. It's kind of a, what, kind of a cross between a Herald and, like, the Black Sails agenda.
I guess. Sort of.
Yeah. I mean, the Heralds put stuff on top of your tech. The black sails gives you access to about anything as long as you win the right challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I like him, but probably not so much in, like, the traditional Brotherhood deck. Because you notice the wording on him is a little different than something like, say, Barrack.
Yeah.
Where Barrack needs there to be zero power on your house card, and Harwin just needs your opponents to have more power on their house card than yours. So you could use him in a regular Stark deck of mm-hmm. any other variety, and anytime mm-hmm. the opponent's ahead on power, you can trigger him. Which
is a nice
cool.
step. Yeah. I don't know if I necessarily call it a step forward for Brotherhood, as much as it is kind of a step sideways.
yeah. It's probably a semi-step forward for non-Brotherhood decks.
Yeah.
And just kind of a middle ground for Brotherhood themselves.
A northeast step.
yeah, something like that. They're moving to Maine.
Yeah.
yeah.
Jeez, I guess I'll grade him first.
Sure.
In melee, you're going to get that off more often than not, which is pretty cool, to kind of set up maybe a combo of some kind, which is nice. And Brotherhood, that's a nice step for Brotherhood, but Brotherhood is just decimated, especially after seeing Cold Hands.
Grit.
And
Mel's favor.
Oh, yeah, Andy Grit and, yeah, Mel's favor. That sucks. So I'm going to go ahead and give Harwin a C. I think that he, that ability is kind of cool, but it's awfully hard to make it with those stats into a good Stark deck.
You know, I think it's pretty reasonable to slip like a single copy of him into pretty much any Stark deck. You know, I can't think of any where I wouldn't respect a decent stat, unique guy, that has the potential to, you know, search me out anything. He doesn't straight up give you card advantage, though, since he puts it on top of the deck, and it's, you know, still challenge dependent, and a little dependent on letting your opponent get ahead of you. So it's not great. Yeah.
If he had a... Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm interrupting.
Probably like a C.
Yeah. What I was going to say before I rudely interrupted you there was if he had a way to draw that card, you know, some other type of response or something, then that would just be... that would probably be insane. He'd probably have to be a 4/2 in that case.
Say the Blackfish in play.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Right there. Trigger that response, then the other one.
Right.
That stock of that card just went up.
That helps a lot. You know, one other thing that is worth pointing out with Harwin is, unfortunately, he does not work with something like Rickon that copies the search effect, which at first you think, oh, that'll be awesome. I'll get twice the search. Mm-hmm. But since Harwin puts it on top of your deck instead of in your hand, you search out whatever, put it on top, then when you copy it with Rickon, yeah, you shuffle that away again, so... Yep, that's a bummer. So, I think I'm up next with our next card.
Yep.
We are changing houses again, now to Martell with Obara Sand. She's a unique 3-cost character with 3 strength, a military and a power icon. She's a sand snake and a bastard, and has a war crest. And her text is, Obara Sand gets +2 strength and gains renown while she's attacking a player who controls more characters than you. Seems alright. Seems like Martell gets kind of a weird little Warcrest theme without having as many, you know, ways to take advantage of it. You know, like they've got the event that grants the Warcrest. But maybe it's just because I don't think as much about wanting to use those response events out of Martell. Yeah, I mean, she's alright. She's definitely nice as another, unique for, Quentin decks. I think I'd probably pick this Obara over some of the others.
I would pick this Obara over all of the Obaras. Like, this is fantastic. In a Sand Snake deck, you're probably not going to get this. Luckily, there are other Sand Snakes that will give her renown and cool stuff like that. You probably won't get the +2 because you'll have shit out Sand Snakes on your turn.
Mm-hmm.
In a traditional Martell deck, quotations, traditional Martell deck, she's going to rock and roll, and that's synergy with the Red Viper, which is excellent. On your To the Spears turn, if you're playing like heavy control and you get her and the Viper and a couple other renowned characters, like this fits right into Martell Rush, which is excellent. And obviously in Melee, it's going to be fantastic, but she'll absolutely see play in Joust to great effect. Like you said, they can't use that Warcrest really. They don't really have those kind of tools. That's not to say you can't build a Warcrest deck out of Martell, but you're probably not going to see it too often. But excellent. Like, +2, man. 3/5. That's money.
It's pretty good stats right there. And it is not unreasonable to have less characters than an opponent. But man, Martell's getting so much of that kind of thing lately. I think it's going to be a tough balancing act for them, you know? You run all those characters, and then you start getting into a place where, you know, if you actually put them all into play, you may have as many or more than your opponent. So you got to figure out what's expendable, what can, you know, afford to not be on the board or not in the deck. I don't know. It's just an interesting balancing point, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I see it. I see that she's going just fine. I mean, I guess the Martell Quentin decks can get kind of out of hand at times whenever they're rolling on all cylinders and
yeah,
just pumping out characters and cards.
If she's a unique with Vengeful and, you know, drawing you a card when she stands and whatnot in the Quentin deck, she's probably still doing all right, even if
yeah,
she's not getting the extra strength and renown.
Well, she's fabulous.
And of course, as we mentioned for some other stuff, she's even easier to trigger in Melee. You know,
oh,
someone
yeah,
is bound to have more characters than you.
Yeah. So what would you give her?
You know, she's solid if unexciting. So I think I'd give her C+, maybe.
I give her a nasty, stinky B. Absolutely.
Wow, willing to give her a B.
Absolutely. Totally. Like, that's the best Obara that's been printed, hands down. She fits right in. Maybe I'm still playing Martell the old school way, but last time I saw, we totally had the tools to have less characters and some sweet little, you know, bounce effects in between everything like that. To just, oh my god, and with the guy who goes into shadows at Haustain Spearman and stuff like that, is just synergy right there to control your opponent's characters and have less than them and do your challenges. That's great. Just remember to do military last.
Yes, exactly.
Don't be a Daryl. So yeah, she gets a B, absolutely. I think she's great.
All right.
Moving on, the next one, a Martell event. It is Prepare for War. Martell only. Any phase. Choose any number of influence-providing cards with combined printed cost, 3 or lower. Kneel all location cards or stand all chosen cards. Or, I'm sorry, kneel all chosen cards or stand all chosen cards. I don't know where I got location from, but that's not bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably the worst of these type of events that we've seen so far. You know, you could kind of throw a Targ or Martell player off their game by kneeling their stuff, but then there's still four houses that it's not going to do hardly anything against.
Yeah.
In Martell, you know, you could stand your own influence for a surprise Red Vengeance, maybe. But it seems pretty inefficient. I'd almost just want to have another influence card on the board so my opponent sits there staring at the two influence, wondering if I've got the Red Vengeance in hand.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fun. You can also stand your Tower Knight. Jeez, the booze is getting to me.
Yeah.
You can stand your Tower Knight or your Paramore if you really wanted to.
You could.
Do some surprise stand. I mean, I don't know. You know, it could possibly do some damage. It would be fun. Like, I think that whenever you do see this card, you will not see it as a 3 of. You will see it floating around in a heavy influence deck as a 1 of. Like, in that moment where I absolutely need to pull off a Red Vengeance as well as Prince's Wrath or something like that. It could be fun. Maybe not super competitive, but it could be fun.
I really don't think it's going to see any play. I'm giving this a pretty solid D.
D, yeah. I was going to give it a D too. So, it gets a D from me as well.
Maybe a D minus, the more I think about it. I just keep thinking about how, you know, the effect isn't terrible, but I really know it's just not going to see any play. You know, think about the other events in Martell.
Yeah. No, you're right. Making it into the event slot in a Martell deck is not easy. So, but yeah, D is where it's at. I think you'll see it somewhere, definitely. As just like, oh god, well, I you know, that absolute time when you need it. And if Attack from the Sea becomes really popular.
Maybe, yeah, if it does.
Hey, I played it at Worlds. It was effective.
Hey, you definitely shut me down for a turn with it. Stopped a bunch of those Lanny locations, like that Pentoshi Manor.
There you go. And then I lost the shit out of that game. But anyways... Yeah, we gave it a D. Moving on.
Next one, then? Okay. It's a Martell attachment. Now we get to see their favor. This is Doran's favor. It's 0 gold. It's, of course, a favor attachment. Has set up and attached to a character you control. Discard attached character from play. Cannot be saved when you kneel Doran's favor to pay an influence cost. Oh, that's right. It has 4 influence on it. exactly as much as you need to play Westeros Bleeds. Or the Princess Plans, for that matter.
Yes, or any awesome influence event. This is titties. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to just, if you can throw that on some little weenie that you just don't care about, even a paramour or something.
And it has set up, finally!
Exactly. You're not going to find...
this is so good.
More influence at a cheaper cost than that. Though I would probably always recommend using it on things like Westeros Bleeds or the Prince's Plans that are likely to net you some card advantage in the end, since you'll be down 2 cards if you kneel this to use it for any effects.
Yeah.
But hey, in a pinch, you know, losing the right character in order to smack your opponent with that Red Vengeance might be worth it.
That's right. I think this is just the prototypical attachment here. I love setup. I love zero cost. 4 influence is redunk. I can't get over this. This is excellent. Especially because you can use it on, Beric. I'm sorry. You can use it on Beric, so maybe not all hope is lost for Brotherhood, right? Or you could even put it on your Red Viper and really have some fun with it. No, you can't.
You can't.
He's going to get discarded by the attachment.
Oh, right.
I was like, you could put it on the Red Viper. He's going to get discarded by the attachment. I was like, well, it won't matter.
You could put it on, say, Missandei out of house. In Targ.
There you go.
And she can't be discarded.
But the first thing that hit me whenever I saw this is that, hey, we could put it on Beric Dondarrion and run some Martell Brotherhood now. Unfortunately, Brotherhood has gotten destroyed, but this would be really fun to put on there.
Yeah. You know, also, another thing to note, since I mentioned Prince's Plans a couple times, it's worth pointing out that if you use this to play Prince's Plans, you don't get it back with Prince's Plans, because it'll still be morbid until the Prince's Plans event is finished resolving.
Yeah.
So, just worth pointing out, because I think that's probably a pretty common mistake that'll come up when people first crack this open. So, what kind of rating do you give it in the end, then, Daryl?
Oh, man. I'd like to give it an A. I really enjoy it. But it is an attachment, and it does get rid of a character. So unless you're playing to Westeros Bleeds, it's only going to work for a number of really useful effects that are going to be worth that. I give it a B, though. For real, I have faith in this card. I believe in this card. 4 influence is excellent.
What about you? You know, I don't think I would go that high. Wow. You know, it's worth pointing out that this is no Seat of Power. I don't think it has some potential. I think you know, it's kind of in that field of it's not that good until somebody breaks it. So I think, you know, weirdly enough, because it is an attachment and it's got that extra cost of nuking your own character when you use it, I feel kind of iffy about it overall. I'm leaning towards like a C-, with the caveat that I do see that possibility there that somebody's going to find some way to break it. And maybe it'll be you.
I don't count your chickens before they hatch on that one. I don't know if it'll be me, but it's certainly going to be fun. Moving along.
Mm-hmm.
Is it me?
Yes, sir.
I know there's only 2 of us, and I can't even... All right. This is... We're moving into Baratheon territory. This is Brightwater, Man-at-Arms. He is 2 cost, 4 strength, military icon, as well as a power icon. The Bannerman, and House Florent trait. He is deadly, and it reads, Brightwater Man-at-Arms does not kneel to attack or defend. At the end of the dominance phase, discard Brightwater Man-at-Arms from play.
This looks so good to me.
You like that, huh?
I do.
Tell me, go ahead and elaborate more on that, because I'm not seeing it.
Really?
I mean, I get it. I mean, I see 2-for-4 with Deadly that discards him. I mean, I guess you're right. He does not kneel to attack or defend. That's pretty nice.
Attack or defend is huge. That changes challenge phases right there. I mean, two cost is really, you know, pretty cheap, especially for that kind of strength. He's going to be good on setup. Sure, maybe you have to watch out for something like Harry the Riverlands coming after him. And if stuff like Harry the Riverlands or Breaching the Walls starts seeing a bunch of play, it's going to be because of things like Brightwater Man-at-Arms. But man, even if you play him on setup, he's still like available to you for challenges that whole first turn. Deadly, so he's forcing through stuff there. Since he's not kneeling for either attack or defense, he's probably still standing up to count dominance because he's not discarded till the end of dominance. So he's probably earning you 3-4 power.
Yeah, you're probably right. especially in a rush deck and with the new Bera agenda.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. If you've also got that agenda, he goes then from 3-4 power to being like 5 power, and that starts looking scary. And then, of course, even if you lose him, you know, a couple turns later in the game when you flip your Mel schemes, he's just awesome to pull back out of the discard pile and go at him again.
Yeah, Mel schemes, absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty much just a locking up of the game at that point.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess you're right. That could be really, really good.
Yeah, you know, it's probably worth talking about at length another time. But man, Mel scheme just works so good with so many things. Might be time for a Berlitha on that at some point.
Well, you might be onto something there. I mean, of all the schemes, I mean, the next best one is obviously Cersei schemes.
I would say so.
Or scheme, rather.
Yeah.
Other than that, the rest, I don't want to say the rest are garbage, but the rest are not good. Compared to the power of the other ones, the other two, I should say. Anyways, that's definitely a conversation for another day. But yeah, you're right. Brightwater Man in Arms is actually ballerific.
Yeah.
I'll give him, God, if he had Renown, it'd be awesome.
Well, I mean, that's what Noble Cause is for, man.
Yeah. I'll give him a B. Only because he gets rid of himself, he gets a B. But he's good.
Yeah, I'm feeling like a B+ because of that self-discard. But I mean, just really think, like, if you think back about Bera over the years, right, what's been the main thing holding them back? And we're going to, for the moment, ignore the kind of combo-y stuff like Xylar took and the Knights of the Hollow Hill stuff that I think it was Chad, right, was playing at Worlds? And that one
was
over
it Chad, or was his name Chris? Maybe you're right. Maybe it was Chad.
I thought it was Chad Jamnik that was playing it.
Oh, that's right. It was Jamnik. No, you're right. Sorry.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I did not catch the name. I can't recall now who won over in Stalik. But regardless, thinking back on what's normally been holding them back in their more normal types of builds rather than the funkier combo stuff,
it's efficiency.
Yeah, like all their characters are these big 4-cost, 3-strength, you know, lords and stuff that just junk up their resource curve in the deck. And Brightwater Man-at-Arms totally flips that on its head.
Yeah, what do you give them?
I'm feeling a B+.
B+, okay. Yeah, whenever I first saw him, I wasn't that thrilled. And then I thought about the rest of the stuff that would be in a deck with him that definitely makes him worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a target for your Rob Stark earlier. So,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe that Rob is going to prove to be more useful than I first thought, giving him AD. We'll see. You're next.
Okay. This one is a Bera event. Forced March. I can't talk.
Yeah, I know. The booze is really sinking in, man. Mm-hmm.
it's House Baratheon only. Any phase, stand any number of characters with combined printed cost 3 or lower. You know, that's pretty cool. I don't think I like it quite as much as Harry the Riverlands. But the ability, you know, we've really learned stand is really strong, and this gives you the ability to maybe stand several guys.
Yes, yeah, stand is money. Out of Baratheon, the majority of your guys, unfortunately, that you really want to stand are cost 4 and above, but, there's some cost 3 guys that'll make it worth your while, and like you said, stand is always good. Always. Always good, unless your opponent runs Valor Doharis. Then you're going to wish you didn't have all that stand.
Yeah, then it could be bad. but, you know, even... You made a good point about it not hitting those 4-cost beefy guys that we were talking about. But a Noble Cause is going to want to probably skew their deck down at lower cost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it only hits the characters... I mean, we'll talk about Noble Cause in a minute... But it only hits the characters that are cost 2 and higher. So, of course, Forced March then is not going to hit 2 of those characters. But if you're filling up your deck with a lot of 2-cost characters, what do you need? 1-cost characters to round out the 5 gold for setup. Conveniently, that also rounds things out on Forced March so that you could stand 2 characters out of it.
Yep.
So, you know, I like it. It's not great, you know, compared to the prior card. But it's pretty solid. I'd give it a C.
Okay. Jeez. I'm so crazy about stand. I do love it. I don't know. I want to, you know, I'm going to give it a B. Just because it's stand, man, and stand rules. I mean, you know, there's less and less distinct mastery running around as is, but with this, you open up some more options. Granted, no cost 4 or above, but I like it. I'm going to give it a B. I'm going to do it.
All right. Good for you, man.
I'm going to do it. Anyways. Put me in the game, coach. I'm going to do it. Okay. Anyways, next up is the agenda we've been talking about for Baratheon.
Mm-hmm.
It is a noble cause. House Baratheon only. You draw one less card during the draw phase to a minimum of 1. Your Baratheon characters with printed cost 2 or higher gain renown. Holy shit, Zillis. That's good stuff.
It is a game warping effect right there. Warping. You're really front loading in this deck. The old Baratheon mantra was, you know, win by turn 2 or go home. And this is the agenda for that deck. If you haven't won by turn 2 or 3, you're probably going to lose because you're going to be buried in a mountain of card disadvantage because of your own agenda.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this, the impact that this has on the meta. I mean, Baratheon has always been a rush house, obviously, but we are seeing people take it in another direction with the Knights of Hollowhill deck. It's going to be nice to see it go back to its roots. And I realize that there are decks out there that are still rushing and still doing it. But this is really as plain Jane as it gets, as aggro as it gets. Like, hey, we know we're drawing one less card every turn. and we're just going to try to get there as fast as we possibly can. So it's going to be nice to see the decks that come with this to see if they're going to do a lot to maybe counter the Valor or whatever, so the steps that they're going to take. So it's going to be fun. It's cool.
Yeah, yeah. It really kind of sets it up as a combo deck, you know? You get the right draw, you win turn two. You don't get the right draw, you know, you wind up getting stuck or something. So it'll be interesting. And there's kind of been, in my mind at least, I don't know how much has been on other people's mind, but there's kind of been an age-old question of, like, how much power is a card worth, right? Because we've had the Bera decks trying to rush and win quickly versus, say, on the other scale, like the Lani control decks that want to slow the game to a crawl, and only gain, you know, a couple power a turn or whatever, but draw a fistful of cards. So Noble Cause, I'm interested to see that interplay of going ahead and sacrificing that extra card for potentially a bunch more power, and I'm excited to watch that balance occur or see if it can be found.
Yeah. So rating an agenda. Now that is difficult
for yeah. me. Especially a brand new one.
Yeah. With Power Behind the Throne, I feel like that was easy. I gave that an A. Obviously, an extra challenge is always awesome, even with the small drawback that it has. This one, a card. You know, Game of Thrones is one of those games where card advantage is such a big deal. You know, we're starting to get more recursion in the game and stuff, but right now, draw is so big still.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm just not going to rate it. No, I'm just kidding. I'll rate it. I'm going to give it, I don't know. I'll give it a B. I'll give it a B. Every character you throw out just about is going to matter. How many Baratheon decks play a guy that's less than two? So, you know, I'll give it a B.
It's hard for me to say, really, without having some more time to play with it and really dig into things, but some of the more recent cards, and particularly the Brightwater Man-at-Arms, has me really thinking Noble Cause might be hella fun. So I'm tentatively giving it a C+.
Yeah.
With the just because, you know, historically Rush sucks.
Jeez.
So I'll wait to see if I need to adjust that up or down. But
yeah. We reserve the right at any time to change our minds like assholes.
Exactly.
Just take it for what it. I mean, seriously, I could see myself giving this an A, like with Royal Entourage and stuff, and like spitting those guys out, like a ton of those guys, and then Mel's schemes to bring things back from your discard pile. If you can manage to find a reliable source of draw out of Baratheon, good luck, by the way. But if you can, then this agenda is just awesome, and it's going to speed up the game. God. Thank God. I've wanted them to speed up the game for so long, and I hope that happens, because I don't like sitting down for like an hour. So, that's my 2 cents.
Yep.
All right.
We can talk about it more after we've had the chance to play with it, I think. All right, so I'm up next then. We're moving houses to Greyjoy now. This is Asha Greyjoy. She's a 4-cost character, 3 strength, military power, military intrigue and power icons, and each one has a naval enhancement. She's a lady and an ironborn. She has renown, and if any opponent has more power on his or her house card than you, Asha Greyjoy cannot be killed. Sneaky. Pretty cool. I remember Jake used to try a Brotherhood deck out of Greyjoy for just this sort of reason. So now he could also back that up with Asha, which could be pretty sweet.
Definitely could be. It definitely has a slot with their new agenda that we'll be talking about. It definitely has a slot with wanting to call it the Long Voyage. Thank you, the Black Sails.
Yeah, so that's having cool. That naval on every icon is so good for Black Sails.
She does not have a crest of any kind, which is a real bummer for me. At least I love crests on good unique characters, but whatever. Is she better than the other one though? That's the question. Is she better than the restricted Asha? Would you run her over that? I mean, in a Black Sails deck, maybe you would.
In a Black Sails, yeah. Yeah, I definitely would. And then I can spend that restricted slot on something else, possibly a plot. I always feel like I don't really want to play much in the way of higher cost characters in Greyjoy, even less so than other houses for some reason. So I am actually a little worried about that 4 cost.
And like we mentioned, it was a nice nod to Brotherhood, sort of, right?
Yeah, sort of. Boy, I'm having a hard mind having a hard time wrapping my mind around the implications of her at the moment, which seems strange for a character. But maybe it's because I'm coming off of trying to think about a new agenda in the game. I'm going to say, though, that she's a worthy replacement for the restricted Asha. If you would like to use your restricted card elsewhere, possibly manning the city walls in Greyjoy with all the sweet armies they have lately. Though, again, that makes her tough in the 4 cost slot if you're running a bunch of those armies. Ah, man. I don't know. I really love the Tricon Renown. The enhancements are great. I'm going to go ahead and give her a B.
All right.
Crazy, but I'm going B.
Yeah, I'm going to give her C. That cost is really high. If you think about the other characters that have that cost, Cersei, Tywin, those are the first two that drop off at me. There's not really any crazy 4 cost Martell guys, but, Baratheon has a ton of 4 cost guys that are just excellent. I don't think that this can be seen like that. I mean, a lot of the time in Greyjoy, you're going to run Winter. Obviously, Wintertime Marauders are still one of the top, in my opinion, top 5 cards in the game still. And I just don't see this card being better than those. I just don't see her being an absolute must have in Joust, at least. Melee, maybe. Yeah, Melee is probably where you're going to see her the most, actually. I'll just leave it at that. I'll give her a C. We can move on, I guess.
Okay, fair enough. I think you're up on the next one.
Next up, we're keeping with Greyjoy. We've got Pike. It is a unique location. It is 0 cost. It is the Iron Islands and a stronghold. It has the text, no attachments, immune to events and character abilities. Power on Pike counts towards your victory total. Any phase, kneel Pike to move 1 power from your house card to Pike.
It's interesting, being immune to events and character abilities and not being able to have attachments is pretty cool. That just leaves it vulnerable to plots, so that's pretty much the same as, being a House of Dreams, which is pretty cool. Moving power from your house card to Pike is less useful. You could use it to try and keep a Brotherhood deck running that's getting power very slowly. you know, slow enough that you can afford to move that.
I used to try to buy into the idea of running Infamy decks with Lannister with the idea like, hey, there's no power to take off my house, but, you know, it proved that that didn't really work that great.
Yeah, and you were putting that on something like, say, Beric that couldn't be killed at just the flip of the plot that would take a little bit more action. You know, there are a lot of people right now running City Besieged, and you don't even have to have any city plots in the discard pile for City Besieged to take out Pike.
Yeah.
If you've been putting your power there, it's not going to be good.
Which, that's an interesting idea. You know, how are you going to get players to buy into to playing this? Honestly, I don't see any synergy in any Greyjoy cards except for the idea of Brotherhood, but Brotherhood's already been annihilated with all the new cards. Like, unless they're planning on creating some awesome support for Brotherhood, I don't see a reason to run this, especially since it has a limit. You can only move one power at a time. If it said any number, or if it said I don't know, you know, but if it said it's a way to move more power than just one, like, I don't get it. Maybe there's going to be cards to come out that feed off of that. I don't know.
Yeah, I have to agree that I just don't really understand what it's trying to do in Greyjoy.
Yeah.
So
I'll give it an F.
Ooh, straight up F.
It is useless. I don't understand it as of right now.
I'm going to rate it ever so slightly higher than that. I'm going to go with an F plus for one reason.
Nice.
I did come up with a way that it does sort of relate to some Greyjoy stuff.
Okay.
You know, the recent cards that came out that get an extra ability for you having more locations than an opponent. This helps you keep that location edge. Even if your opponent's using, like, favorable ground or something, Pike's going to stay on the board.
And there is tech to have, obviously, we just looked at it, less power on your house than your opponent or whatever. But
we looked at Harwin, who was a start card. We didn't see a, you know, if there was a Greyjoy card that we just got that dealt with that, then sure, maybe Pike made sense.
Yeah,
but
there's Asha. We just looked at Asha.
Oh, my apologies. I don't know why I'm editing Asha out of my memory just now.
See, we thought Booze would make the episode better. Man, we were way off.
Yeah. Okay, so Pike helps keep Asha active. I don't know. It's still flimsy, though, and it only moves the one power per turn. It might help you have less power on your house card. It might not.
I mean, with City Besieged, with Search and Attain, with ways to, well, the two main plots, I suppose, that'll get rid of that, it seems asinine to try and put power on your house just to lose it all. So I just don't see this making the cut. Now, does the rest of the cycle contain something for this? I hope so. I hope there's more synergy there, but as of right now, I just don't see it.
Yeah. Maybe I'll upgrade it to a D because of Asha.
And maybe I'll upgrade it to a... No, I'm not going to upgrade it. It'll probably always be an F.
Fair enough. Alrighty. Is it me next?
It's you next.
Okay. This is a Greyjoy event. Storming the Shore. Greyjoy only. Any phase, choose and kneel any number of locations with combined printed cost 3 or lower. I actually really dig this one as far as this little cycle goes. You know, for a choke to just knock out 3 streets or what have you, that's pretty handy. Not to mention, it can affect a bunch of other stuff like Pentoshi Manor or the Lannister Iron Throne, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah, this card is absolutely titty town, for a number of reasons. One, yes, for choke is the obvious choice. Another, in my Worlds deck, I ran Captain of the Iron Fleet, which the location had to be kneeling for you to discard it. So this is right on par with that.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. This card is very useful.
Yeah. Geez, even, you know, think about some scenario where your opponent's playing Targ, right? And they've got two Summer Seas and Aegon's Hill out. You play Storming the Shore, you kneel Aegon's Hill so they're not getting to look at your hand, they're not trashing characters out of it, and you just wrecked their influence base.
Exactly.
And that, I don't think, will be an uncommon sort of scenario.
Yep.
This one's good. This one, I think, is right up there. Maybe a little better for the sort of impact it'll have on the game than Harry the Riverlands.
Yeah, well, with the number of Pintoshis running out there, too, so not even just against Influence, but and not even against Reducers, but against those some of those other utility locations, very nice.
Even opposing Iron Mines. A lot of people forget you have to kneel the Iron Mine and discard it.
Mm-hmm. So what would you rate it?
I think it's pretty good. I give it a B+. I'm going to go ahead and stick with the B+.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a B. It's good. It's obviously not going to be in every single deck ever, but it's definitely good.
Okay.
All right, let's move it on.
Yep, you're up.
Moving on to The Old Way, where if you like our Facebook page, which we hope you do, you've already seen this card. I will read it again, though. It is an agenda. It is House Greyjoy only. It says, after a challenge resolves, the player who counted the lowest total strength must choose and kill a participating character he or she controls. Interesting and fun.
Yeah, you know, we just spent half of last episode talking about it, so I don't know if there's really a whole lot more to say other than Asha interacts well with it.
Yep.
Jump her in to add some strength on your side in a challenge, or chump block with her when she cannot be killed. You know, she works that well.
And it'll be interesting to see some Intimidate tech in there as well. You know, you see a little bit of Intimidate tech early on, and then they drop this Asha who can jump in, who you may be able to give Intimidate to and maybe a Strength boost. You're just like, oh my god, this is going to definitely, it's going to be good. Did we rate it last episode? I don't even remember.
You know, I don't think we actually gave it a rating in the end.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give it an A. I think it's excellent. I think it's really good. And I think if you've built your deck to tune, to play to this tune that this agenda brings, then you're going to have a great time and wreck some fools. Or you're just going to get a whole lot of unopposed challenge, which speeds up the game, which I like. So.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty solid, and it's really going to shake up Melee. The problem, I think, is you're going to be toast against Targ. Even just them recycling Forever Burning over and over turns your agenda against you hard. So I can't see myself giving it an A. I'm feeling that.
Run some cancel, bitch.
Maybe like a B-. Targ is still a pretty strong house these days, I think.
Well, I think you would be a fool to run this agenda and not have cancel at your disposal, so... You know, finger dance or to be a Kraken, something like that. But I see where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I'm smelling what you're stepping in. All right. You're up.
Next one, we change houses again. This time over to Targaryen. This is a location. It is unique. and it's named Griffin's Roost. It's one cost, a stronghold, and Stormlands traded. House Targaryen only. While any opponent's house card has more power than your house card, raise the claim value on your revealed plot card by 1 during power challenges. That seems pretty cool. Claim boosting is always nice. In Joust, it's going to be so-so. In Melee, though, I think this is going to be pretty rocking. Like, you already have some incentive in Melee to go after whoever's in the lead, but Griffin's Roost does it in a way that punishes them even more and pushes you higher. I think that's going to be looking pretty sweet, especially, you know, Heir to the Iron Throne's popular there. Suddenly you're making 2 power challenges. You know, if you let yourself kind of rope-a-dope your opponents and look like you're behind, and then 2 people are ahead of you in power, and you can throw the extra claim power challenge at each of them, ooh, that has some nice potential.
Yeah, a little love for Brotherhood, sort of, in another sidestepping way. I love Claim Boost, and definitely Melee. Joust, I just don't see this card ever being played in Joust. But in Melee, totally. And maybe that's more the tone of this entire pack, really. I mean, maybe that's sort of, you know, where they're kind of going. But in Melee, you would be a fool if you're running Targaryen not to run this in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, definitely great in Melee.
And it might be kind of cool when the prize stuff starts hitting the table and you can give your opponent more power, maybe mid-challenge. I mean, I don't know when you may be able to trigger some more of that stuff than those that have been spoiled, but it seems to reason there'd be some challenge phase things that you could take advantage of. And just give them that power and immediately take it right back with the extra claim.
Yep. I agree. Right. If you had to rate it, what would you give it?
You know, that's tough. I don't normally base my ratings too much on the Melee side of things. But it's not going to be great in Joust. You know, kind of in that average there, I'm going to probably just give it a C and acknowledge that it'll be pretty awesome in Melee.
Yeah, in Melee it's probably a B. In Joust it's probably a D. So just take that as you will. Next up, oh, looks like we've got Danny's Favor. Daenerys' Favor, I suppose. It's a zero-cost attachment. It's a Targaryen attachment, obviously. Attach to a character you control. Attached character gets +3 strength, gains the Bannerman trait, and gains a military, an intrigue, and a power icon. After you lose a power challenge, discard the attached character from play. Cannot be saved.
I wish this one had set up.
Yeah, me too. +3 strength and a tricon, though? Holy macadamia nuts.
Yeah, they turn into a pretty big beast for a little bit. As long as you don't lose that power challenge. You know, it's interesting, Targ got 2 favors.
Oh, yeah. So they got Aegon's, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep, yeah, that is interesting. This is pretty good, and you know, and it does. It's gonna read more into this theme that they have of cost or strength over cost. So if this becomes really popular, hey, maybe that Rob we were talking about, we'll see some play.
Yeah, you know, this needs another character to do something, and it's really just a pretty glorified strength buff, though, and a telegraphed one. You know, it doesn't have, like, ambush or something, so I don't think it'll see a bunch of play. It's kind of neat. Maybe, you know, the good old King Viserys deck would probably like it.
Oh, yeah, the King Viserys deck would definitely dig it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Melee again is going to be really good in Melee.
Maybe there's definitely more people that might be throwing power challenges at you.
Maybe if you're going to run some out of house jazz, maybe even Night's Watch becomes more of a thing. I mean, that's plus three strength, Tricon Night's Watch guy. If you're not running the agendas, this is a hard card for me to grade because these stats are excellent, and this cannot be saved part, you know, to get discarded, isn't that big a deal for me. Because with Targaryen, we're going to be bringing those guys back with recruitment or ambush from the plains. So I don't know of how big of a deal that is. Like, this is a pretty good deal here.
Man,
I don't want to rate cards anymore.
If you say so, I don't think it's really going to see much play, and I think it does less for you than, say, Doran's Favor, which comes with, you know, a character loss as well. I think I would probably give Danny's Favor like a D plus.
Plus, I'm gonna give a solid B. I think this is excellent. And for the record, for you folks listening, I realize, yeah, there's only two of us, so you're probably not getting the best content available to you. But I will say that I have been getting texts from Kyle Vansel specifically about this card, and he just thinks that it is just bonkers good. And so I'm sure that he would right now just be giving us all kinds of kind of a stance on why this card is just bonkers good. But I'm sort of there with him. I think that it's gonna. I think it's good. I think it's decent.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So did I rate it? I don't think I have yet.
You said B.
Oh, I did say B. Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. All right then. So moving on.
I'm up with the next one then. This time we delve into the neutral stuff that we've got a plot here. The Redwyn Straits. It's a 4-0-1 and a river plot. When revealed, the player with the fewest cards at his or her command adds 4 gold to his or her gold pool. 4 gold. That means if you have less cards at command, this is going to be an 8-0-1 plot. You know, there used to be one of those in the game in the CCG era called Trading with the Pentoshi that saw play all of the time. Now, it has, you know, a different drawback on it. You couldn't use reducers that turn, but Redwyn Straits looks pretty freaking rad.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, especially if you're a Knights of the Hollow Hill player.
Yeah, you start the game with 10 gold that turn, plus on the next turn, you know, if you're smart, you didn't play out your whole hand even with the 10 gold. So on turn 2, you can play a second river plot of some variety and copy that to get another big boost. You get that gold right off the bat when you reveal this plot. So if you wait and do this, say on like turn 2 or something, maybe you've already got some stuff in shadows, like Pyromancer's Apprentice, you can bring them out. You know, yeah. There's some way to play around with that.
Yeah. And, you know, one person is talking here in the comments, because on AGOT cards, you can comment on a card, and they're saying right off the bat, Knights of the Hollow Hill restricted in the near future. I don't know. I don't know. That's pretty crazy. This card is, I think it's excellent to bring you from behind in a Knights of the Hollow Hill deck, turn 1, turn 2, depending on your matchup, you know, 10 gold. That's ridiculous. And the fact that it still has claim, you know, there have been some garbage cards created that have given you like 6 gold. What is it? Across the Narrow Sea, 6 gold, 0-0, right? And you can't have challenges declared against you. The other one was Feast or Famine, 6 gold or you can't do any challenges. Like, this is just straight up giving you 4 gold, even if you have to play it and you have the most cards at your command. Like, this is just crazy good. I really like this card.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's going to be great for House of Dreams decks, too, which are probably still going to be down on command by, you know, a card or two, but maybe can make a little bit more use of the gold than Knights of the Hollow Hill because they've got the added flexibility. Like, Knights of the Hollow Hill, I feel like I always have to really watch my card advantage and how quickly I play things out of my hand and stuff because I start so many cards behind. I think, you know, House of Dreams doesn't have to watch that quite as closely.
Yeah. And, yeah, this is good for everything. For a lot of things. Control and certain rush decks even will be able to take advantage of this. So this is an interesting card, and I feel like maybe a card that's going to need to be watched a little bit. Jeez. Yeah, that's really good. If you had to rate it, which you do, what are you going to rate it?
Oof, wow. You know, I'm leaning towards this being the best river plot that we've seen so far. It's looking pretty good. It's still not for everybody, so I'm probably just going to give it like a B+, but it's pretty darn good.
Yeah, and I'm again going to talk about how sad I am that it doesn't do what the rest of the river plot, well, not what the rest, but what a lot of the river plots do, which is trigger the next river plot. You know, why? I mean, it must be something in the balancing, which I understand, but at the same time, you know, I think we should keep with that theme. I don't think we see enough river plots in game as it is, but maybe this will be enough to boost them up even more. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and it only gets a B because there's only certain. Obviously, you're not going to run it in every deck. You're not always going to need 10 gold. You know, at some point, you know, you have more gold than you know what to do with. So, but there are definitely certain decks that are going to take advantage of this. So, I will give it a B as well, but. It can be an A card in certain decks.
Okay.
All right.
I think you're up next.
Yep. Next up, we've got Gendry. He's neutral. He's unique. He's one cost, one strength, military power. He's a brotherhood, an ally, and a bastard. He says, while any opponent's house card has more power than your house card, Gendry gains response. After you win a challenge in which Gendry participated, move one power from the losing player's house card to Gendry. So a little shout out to the TV show, I think, there. He's okay. I mean, he's going to be in a Brotherhood deck, absolutely.
Well, if anybody plays Brotherhood deck at this point, it's nice. He definitely, man, speeds those decks up. Because the opponent will always have more power if they have any at all. But I just still feel that Brotherhood in general is going to be so fragile. You don't want to really be loading Gendry up with power too much because he's one cost, you know, threat from the north or what have you just eats him alive. Barrack's not that safe because of Cold Hands and Ygritte. Actually, neither is Gendry. He can be hit by either of them as well. Man, I just feel like they brought such a huge hammer against Brotherhood decks of all kinds last pack. I just don't think this pack does enough to bring them back into being competitive.
Yeah. What I will say about Gendry is that he's a nice one-coster to throw into some decks. It would be hard just to be like, oh, I have an open slot. Let's throw Gendry. But he's okay. I mean, in melee, maybe. I don't know. I wish he could have melee or something. That'd be great, especially for a unique. You know, unique characters are supposed to be, at least in my mind, the most powerful characters. They're the ones that can be efficient, whereas the non-uniques are supposed to be kind of generic. I feel like Gendry should have a little more to him. Maybe a Noble Crest or something as well. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, since he doesn't have to go with Brotherhood for sure because he has that new wording on his ability, I guess, you know, there's some decks where I would be willing to throw one copy of him in just on an off card. He's okay for setup. Maybe he'll give me a couple power. And I suppose the more I think about it, maybe in that sort of situation, if, say, Ygritte comes out and takes him from me, well, my opponent's just getting their own power back anyway.
In your opinion, do you think this card deserves to be an ally?
No.
Yeah.
Not after last pack.
I feel like maybe this is an oversight or, in the testing or something in the final make here. I don't know, but I see no reason at all for this card to be an ally. Jeez. Yeah, I'll give him a D. Big old fat D. The only reason I don't give him an F is because he does claim power, which is really nice, or moves power. So it's not really claiming, it's moving power. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah. Rating-wise, I think I'd just give him, like, a C. Just kind of middle of the road.
I don't know. I'd probably run a fanatical follower over him.
You are sure less likely to give your opponent a win that way. There's a slight chance they could get enough power off of him to win the game. So, let's see. We've got our last card from the pack up next, then.
The last one. It is the last one.
All right, this one is a two-cost neutral, Lady of the Leaves. She's also two strength, an intrigue, and a power icon. She's a Brotherhood, and she's immune to events. And while any opponent's house card has more power than your house card, Lady of the Leaves gains any phase. Kneel Lady of the Leaves to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, treat that character as if its printed text box were blank. Boy, if only this was a response. If she was somehow able to be worded as a response, so that at least you could be like, okay, well, if I build a Brotherhood deck that's all high initiative so I can always make sure I'm first player and get first response, then I'd be like, oh, okay, so Brotherhood, sure, they get hammered by Ygritte and Cold Hands, but at least they've got Lady of the Leaves to try and make it, you know, competitive here. But no, she won't. She won't stop them at all.
Mm-hmm. Repeatable blank is cool. This stipulation is kind of eh. Maybe the push for the Brotherhood guys in this pack is skewed towards melee. You know, I've felt that a lot of this pack has been skewed towards melee, and maybe this is trying to really push you towards a Brotherhood melee build, which I haven't seen a lot of, which would be interesting. But still.
Yeah. No, you're right. It does feel like with the new wording on this Brotherhood stuff that it leans more towards melee. And it's a nice ability, but I just keep looking at the Brotherhood as a cohesive whole. Doesn't get anything out of this. We just get a smattering of random effects that might get played on their own. Which just seems like such a bummer after we got the Kingsguard so recently that came out and took a theme that was pretty blah before and turned it into a pretty, like, cohesive whole.
Yeah. I'll agree with that. Hopefully more stuff in this pack comes out that pushes Brotherhood more, because I think I'm one of many that would love to see Brotherhood become a thing. Like, the Brotherhood characters were cool, like, you know, the Mad Huntsman and Barrick and even Angai is like, man, those guys are cool. Mm-hmm. We want to see those guys. Like, give us more of a reason to play them. I'm not saying to break the damn thing, but just make it to where someone's not just going to take all of our power and just we just lose. Golly. Anyways, if you had to rate her, what would you rate her?
You know, I still think that blank is pretty powerful, and if you're just running her as, you know, like a one of and not in a Brotherhood deck, I think she still brings quite a bit of value to the table. She's no Mira Reed, I think, because she's more vulnerable being neutral at the moment. But she's got that immunity, which is nice. Maybe the immunity kind of puts her on par with the shadows of Mira. No, probably not as much as Mira's shadows. I don't know. So if Mira's an A, then Lady of the Leaves probably gets like a B minus. She's probably the best, I think, out of some of this new Brotherhood stuff, because that's a strong ability.
Well, I look at her like I look at Corset Shay, mm-hmm. who Neil's a character who has more power on their house than you. So Corset Shay never sees any play, and Neil is pretty awesome.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
I think melee, though, this is great. I think against Targaryen dragons, which you see a lot. Yeah, absolutely. I'll blank your fucking Daenerys. Absolutely. You know, or you blank this and you blank that. And I think that the only time you're going to see this particular card is going to be in melee. If somebody runs it in, I could see it in Joust. I mean, obviously, more power on their house card than you, and then you can blank them. Like, that's nice, but is it worth it? I mean, maybe. Blank is really, really good, but I just don't know. I just don't know how much Brotherhood we're going to see. You know, in a good Brotherhood deck, yeah, absolutely. Why not blank a character? But how much Brotherhood are we actually going to see? So, you know, outside of a Brotherhood deck, how good is this? You know, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give it a C, because I think in a Brotherhood deck, it's going in there every single time if Brotherhood could manage to not get its ass kicked.
Boy, that's the tough part. Okay, so there you have it, folks. That's the pack. Overall, I think it's a pretty darn good pack, even if the Brotherhood got the short end of the stick. So I'm eager to see a lot of this stuff in play. I think a lot of it's going to really shake things up.
Yeah, I think there's some great stuff in here. And I don't know. There's only one card that I thought was, like, not necessarily unplayable, but borderline. And that was really it. Everything else seems decent. So I like this pack. I mean, I'm excited. This whole cycle's been fun. So,
yeah, I really agree. It's been great so far. So then, I think we're probably ready for everyone's favorite segment of the show, right?
Yeah. Right before they turn off the podcast.
Exactly. Props and slops.
Props and or slops. In a world where two men get together and talk about their props and their slops, Vin Diesel as Daryl Lloyd, Mickey Rourke as Will Lentz.
Oh God. Mickey Rourke. You know, I was really wondering who you were going to go with. Me, personally, I was pulling for Adam Sandler because I think that'd make for a great buddy cop movie. Yeah. But wow, Mickey Rourke. Whew. Yeah.
They will stop at nothing to create a mediocre prop or slob.
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
So I have a lot to live up to now that the preview guys really built this up. How mediocre can I be? Well, I'm gonna throw a meh out there. Yeah, because I still can't decide yet what it was. I finished reading the Hero of Ages, the last book in the original Mistborn trilogy by Brandon Sanderson. And it was meh. You know, I was still kind of into things up until the last 200 pages or so that I read last night, but everything took, I don't know, just something about the turn it started taking in that last end just felt, a lot of it felt kind of deus ex machina. which is really amusing in a way when you consider what did happen there. So maybe it was some kind of meta call, but it still just felt like a weak, forced turn of events in several ways. There were a few things I liked, but it just didn't feel fulfilling. So I don't know. It was weird. It also felt awfully theological, which, you know, don't get me wrong. I am myself a man of faith, but I guess when the series starts out with this caper kind of Ocean's 11 thing in the first book, you don't expect it to suddenly become something very different by the time you're done with the series. So, I don't know. There you have it. I'm deliberately trying not to be more specific than that because Daryl mentioned earlier that he has not finished it.
Not yet. I'll get there, promise. I have a prop. It is to this game called Starbound. I've been dabbling a bit more than I normally dabble in video games these days. It is a craft and create game, similar on the lines of Minecraft. If you ever played the game Terraria, it is similar to that. It's 2D Minecraft, basically, but there's a whole universe, and you can build mechs and stuff like that. I don't know. It's just really fun. Just having this huge expansive world and playing with my buddies, and so that is what I've been playing. It is in beta right now, and you really see it change and flourish, which has been really fun and has been frustrating with all the crash bugs and stuff. But if you ever get a chance, check out Starbound. It's on Steam if you like those kind of games.
Cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I'm going to throw some props out there to the Dungeons & Dragons character builder on the D&D Insider. I've been looking at trying to find a way to join in on the Wednesday night D&D game that goes on at the Zyler's place. And for anybody that knows me, they may have heard before that City of Heroes was my favorite MMO, and 3/4 of that game was playing with the character creator. And so the D&D character builder is nearly as fun, though considerably less graphical.
Yeah.
So I was playing around with that earlier today, working on an Aladrin hex blade, which seems pretty nice. Cool.
Dude, heck yeah. I got a shifter. It's a paladin shifter. Mm-hmm. No, actually, I switched him now. I'm sorry. He's an Avenger.
Oh, okay.
Pretty awesome. Yeah, 4th ed D&D rules.
Yeah, it looks like there's some cool stuff. And, geez, there's just so many options. So I kind of dig being able to tweak everything to my heart's content. Though I'm not super up on the lore, so there's a lot of reading and things trying to figure out this, that, and the other.
Yeah. All right. Jeez, I feel like I had a prop in front of me, but I forgot it.
Fair enough.
I got a slop, actually, now that I remember. I got a slop. This is long, long overdue. Okay. My slop is to Fantasy Flight Games' stream of the World Championship. Okay? It was terrible. Okay, there's no commentary. There's no anything. You probably couldn't even tell what was going on. I didn't watch it. I just got to hear the feedback from friends who tried to watch it. Now, this is what you need to do, listeners. Okay? You need to contact Fantasy Flight Games, and you need to tell them to have your boy Daryl here commentate for their live stream next year for the World Championship, okay? We need to get in there. We need to get some quality commentating going on, and we need to upgrade production of it and get it hooked up to where we have like people entering in the cards on the side so we can see everybody's hands and like the graphics of the cards and stuff. You know, we should put a little more effort into this. I realize we don't have, we don't play the most popular game in the world, but, all of Championship Weekend, there's tons of games there that we could do. And I think I would be the right man to commentate these games for you Fantasy Flight Games.
I think it would be pretty awesome. And I actually heard other players there that weekend suggesting that we're not Daryl.
No, see, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
So send them an email, spam their forum pages. I don't care what you have to do. Let's make it happen. You got anything else there, Will?
I'm just going to throw out a small slop to the weather. I actually like winter. I like the snow and the icicles and so on and so forth. But I'm going to slop the fact that the weather got bad, like just bad enough to be really annoying, but not bad enough to get me out of work. So
that is a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
That is a bummer. All right. I don't have anything else crazy. Yeah. I think that's really it.
Yep.
I got one last prop. One last prop. My girlfriend has recently been Robin, if you don't know her name. Her name is Robin. She has been taking, I guess they're called perler beads or something, and she's been making little patterns and then melting these perler beads down with like an iron and creating little pixel guys for me.
Oh, cool.
Like characters from video games. So in front of me right now, I have Mega Man and two characters from Final Fantasy VI. One of which, I mean, I asked for them both specifically, but I forget the name. It's the main heroine of Final Fantasy VI.
Terra.
Is it Terra? Okay.
Terra.
And Locke. So far. So this is really cool. It's a really interesting way to kind of get those characters, obviously off of the television screen and into your home. So I'm thoroughly enjoying having these pixelated dudes here. It's really cool. So she's been making all kinds of stuff, like Minecraft stuff and whatnot. So we're going to finish the whole, collection of characters from Final Fantasy VI and then moving on to Castlevania and Metroid, and I'm really excited to just have our house decorated in 8-bit characters. I just think that's awesome. So, props to whatever hobby that is, perler bead melting or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Whatever. That's all I got.
Yep, I'm good here as well.
I don't think you've ever done the Danger Zone. Why don't you go ahead and do it?
Oh, I mean, I have before. It's been a while, but listeners, thanks for sticking with us to the end. Those of you that did, if you know something that we need to talk about here on the show, be sure to mention it in the comments on Facebook or by email to 2champs1chump. Danger Zone.